welcome to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood podcast.
So welcome to Stories That Matter, Hawkwood's podcast series, which invites changemakers, thinkers, artists and innovators to discuss the stories that have influenced them, their visions for the future and the actions they are taking to change the world. Today we are talking to two exceptional people, Jasmine O'Hara and Shomik Datta, who are part of the Hawkwood Fellows Programme. Jaz O'Hara is a British woman human rights defender working in the field of international refugee support and founder of Asylum Speakers. In August 2015, Jaz was one of a group of friends that visited the so-called jungle refugee camp in Calais, France, intending to make a documentary. Shocked by what she found, she wrote a Facebook post that gathered over 65,000 shares overnight, leading to a fundraising campaign. I mean, that's absolutely extraordinary, Jaz. That's amazing. And Shomik, welcome. So Shomik Datta is a composer, television presenter and virtuoso performer of the 19-stringed fretless sarod. He has collaborated with Nitin Sawhney, Anushka Shankar and so many other musicians, and he is currently artist-in-residence with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Born in India and brought up in London, he connects his Bengali roots with global strands to create innovative music, TV shows and public art. He is the recent winner of the Aga Khan Music Award, and his charity Shomik Datta Arts and National Portfolio Organisation of Arts Council England is now based at Hawkwood. So welcome to you both in this sunny room at Hawkwood in the sitting room. And so Jaz, you have founded Asylum Speakers, and I'd love to hear about what inspired you to set up the project and tell us a little bit more about why you're here today.
The reason that this all came to be is actually one person who is also here at Hawkwood today, which is really exciting. So it started in 2015, as your beautiful bio just explained. I loved that. When my foster brother Mez first joined my family. So to give a bit of context, I grew up in a big family, the oldest of four. When my youngest brother was moving out to go to uni or leave home, my mum and dad started looking into fostering or adoption because they hated the idea of having no kids at home anymore. And they discovered that a lot of unaccompanied minors, a lot of refugee children, were arriving to very close to where they live in Kent, in the south of the UK, in need of families. And so they went down this process of foster care, which is quite a rigorous process. It took them about 9 months. And when they were accepted as foster parents, they were matched with a boy who had just arrived. They got a phone call a couple of days later from Kent Social Services saying that a boy had been found hiding underneath the Eurotunnel train. He was 13 years old. He was from Eritrea. He didn't speak any English. And he joined my family that day. And since then, he changed the course of all of our lives. He opened our eyes to not just the asylum system in the UK and how difficult that is to navigate, but also the reasons why people are leaving places like Eritrea, which none of us really understood or knew anything about, and the journeys that they were making, crossing the Sahara Desert, crossing the Mediterranean Sea. And as you mentioned, it led me to go to Calais, where he'd been living, and I wrote about that experience, and I continued to write and create a network of people through social media who wanted to help and do something for the people in Calais to make their lives just a little bit easier at the time. And that's kind of grown and changed and evolved over the years since 2015. But now Asylum Speakers exists to tell a different story about migration, because there is so much misinformation and so much negativity and just horrible rhetoric around refugees, asylum seekers, which comes from our mainstream media, comes from our governments, that I really want to challenge, because a lot of it comes and a lot of opinions are formed when people have never actually met someone with a refugee background. So that's what Asylum Speakers exists to change.
Absolutely inspirational. And I know you were here, actually it was a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, writing your book, telling these stories. And this time you have brought a cohort of people together and are thinking about helping them, supporting them to tell their stories and taking that into schools. Is that
That's exactly it. And I've got a copy of that book that I wrote here at Hawkwood to give you. Because,
how exciting.
Yeah, it's so lovely to think. It doesn't seem like that long ago that I was here, but it was exactly a year ago. It was snowing at the time. And I was coming to the end of writing this collection of 30 stories of people that I'd met over the years working in refugee camps that had inspired me, educated me, and just taught me so much about life and loss and love and humanity and empathy. And I wanted to share some of these learnings in the form of this book as a dedication to those people, and also as a tool to challenge some of those misconceptions, answer some of those questions that people had about refugees and asylum seekers, like things that you hear, common things like, why are refugees all men? Or why don't they stay in the first safe country? Which I knew were not accurate ideas. And so anyway, I compiled this book of 30 stories. And then just before I came to Hawkwood, I met a South Sudanese boy called Giel, who I realized had to be in the book. And I'd already conducted the interviews and I already had my 30 people. And then I added, it's now 31 stories. So I wrote Giel's story here at Hawkwood, and it's one of the most profound, life-changing stories that I've ever heard. It's the last story in the book, and the first story is Mez's story of joining my family. So it's an anthology of these stories, and absolutely, as you say, the book is a tool, as it is a part of this mission to amplify these stories. And we're here this week for Storytelling Week to harness the power of telling these stories. So lots of people from the book are keen to share their stories. For example, Mez went to our local comprehensive school and he found it really difficult that when people asked him where he was from and he said Eritrea, people would look back at him blankly and not understand what was happening there and what was going on. So he's very keen to share Eritrean stories, to talk about what's happening in Eritrea. And so he's here to really learn how to pick out the moments of his whole life to craft this narrative. And that's a difficult thing to do when there's a lot of stories to tell in a whole lifetime, right?
Yes, it's a real skill. So it's incredible that you brought these people together here to support them in that project. Absolutely inspirational. And Shomik, it's just almost serendipity that you are both here at the same time. You've had a long association with, well, it feels like a long association, a very wonderful association with Hawkwood. We met, I think, during the pandemic, actually, wasn't it, when you came here for the first time with the musician Matthew Barley, and have worked on several projects here. But tell me about the project you're working on at the moment and almost the similarities and relationship to Jazza's project she's just described.
Yeah. Jazz, it's really inspiring to hear your work. I obviously knew bits about it and I've seen stuff online, but great to meet you in person here. I feel like Hawkwood is like the hub of where people need to be having these conversations. The project that I'm here with this week is called The Green Room, and it started 2-3 years ago when I had a residency at South Bank, and through it I was able to meet many asylum seekers and refugees who shared with me their stories, and I didn't really know what to do with them, but they all wanted their voice to be heard. That was the main thing, that they felt unheard, they felt misunderstood, misrepresented, they felt they had a label on their forehead and a sort of stigma that they were living with. And what we ended up doing through the project that we developed at South Bank was to weave their stories through music and have no other spoken word in a concert at the Queen Elizabeth Hall. And so there were these 10 individuals who shared their stories of home and stories of travel, and through that we get to understand sort of the climate of different regions politically, but also the actual climate and the changes that are happening. Got to understand the mental health conditions and the mental health issues specifically for people who have been displaced. I got to learn a lot. My eyes really opened up to these issues, and in some ways made me understand that I'm also a migrant, and has since then taken me on a journey of decolonization in some ways. But that project was called Hope Notes, and we toured the country with that project in partnership with Choose Love. And off the back of that, I realized that it wasn't enough. And the next stage would be to bring together artists who have had their artistic journeys truncated because of the need to move. And so I wanted to find people who had left behind their instruments and left behind their studios. And those spaces are so life-affirming for... I mean, I know this as a musician, you know, if I lost my instrument... I mean, when I lose my instrument on a plane or something, it's like heartbreaking.
Well, it happened recently.
It happened recently, so yes. I know. And then, and so, you know, I can't even fathom what this must be like. But I wanted to find people like this and bring them together and offer them this space that you've created for me here, Alicia, through this fellowship and the time that I have here, but sort of offer that space to them and let them voice the project instead of me directing the project with their voices. So this is the next natural step from that previous work and a natural step for me to sort of step aside and create a shape that can be occupied by different things that but the people in that shape, the people in that space are the ones who voice their own stories. So this project's called The Green Room, which for anyone who's been on stage or is an artist, they'll know that it's that sort of limbo space backstage just before you get onto the concert hall or the theater or whatever. And I think the theme of limbo, the theme of a waiting area spoke to me, hence the name.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And it's been really interesting to see that journey from Hope Notes to this project. And I know that you're hoping that you will have a cohort of musicians this year and then build on that over the next few years to really create quite a strong movement around this work.
Yeah, so the charity that I run with a small team of people, we're now based here in the Southwest, yes, at Hawkwood, which is really exciting. The ambition is to develop this cohort, add to it as the months go on, find showcase opportunities for them, but also similarly to what you're doing, sort of maybe find ways in which they can have the skills to go into all kinds of spaces that are necessary and vital spaces in this country, like care homes, like prison wards, like homeless shelters, and be able to channel their artistry into those spaces as well. And of course, to festivals and theatres and concert halls and everything else. But
maybe taking it to places that you might not normally expect, but which have such impact when you work in different places.
And I think to sort of... there's a phrase that's been sitting in my mind for a while, which is like when someone enters this country, they have to assimilate, right? They have to learn a language, they have to learn skills that the skills that they have aren't quite useful here. So there's this process of assimilation, which we think of as a positive one, and it can be, but there's also a cost to that, because in order to assimilate, you need to erase as well and speak less of your own native tongue and cook less of your meals. And there is this erasure that happens. And I think music carries with it the antidote to that, because by playing folk melodies from half the world away, you can keep things alive, you can keep memories alive, you can keep places alive. And then while being here, share it in a totally new context where it has a new relevance.
Beautiful, thank you. Thank you very much. So, Jazz, you've talked a little bit about your inspirations behind your work, but who would you say has been a major influence in your life and career? And are there specific individuals, books, experiences, philosophies that have shaped your thinking? I know how important your mother is to you, because I've heard that story, and she is just such an inspiration. It's a pleasure to have her here at Hawkwood, knowing how she's just opened up her arms to the world in this way. So I'd love to hear about your story.
Yeah, and you know, she's the first person that comes to mind when you ask that question. I think, hang on a minute, maybe I shouldn't say my mum. Maybe that's too cliche, but it's true. It is true that I'm very blessed to have an amazing role model when it comes to being a mother. And that doesn't mean, I don't mean that in the sense of biologically or by blood, that nurturing capacity that we all have within us has been very beautifully demonstrated to me, and also how limitless and infinite love is. And I mention that because I spoke of Mez, who joined my family in 2015. And I remember my mum being very, well, all of us being very excited, but my dad having a level of, what's the best word? Maybe slightly nervous that he wouldn't be able to extend the love that he felt for his four biological children to somebody else's child. Mm. And the very quick realization that when he did step into that role of a father, and when my mum stepped into that role of a mother to Mez, that very, very quickly they felt those exact same feelings and emotions. And my mum always says, you know what, Jazz, having your own kids, it's great, but it's overrated. You can feel the same of that same feeling of nurturing to anyone that you step into that role for. So people told us when Mez joined our family, oh, you're lucky, you know, because he fitted right in, and he's a joy, and he's such a pleasure, and he's such a sweetheart. And my mum would smile and nod and be like, yeah, yeah, he is all of those things. And then a year later, my next brother, Bijo, joined my family from Sudan. He'd also had a very difficult journey, and he'd lost his mum when he was very young. And he said very quickly to my mum, you know, I'm so grateful to finally have this opportunity to have a relationship with a mother figure. And actually, I shouldn't use the word grateful, because although he might have used it, we were just workshopping this morning about how this idea of expecting gratitude is problematic. And that's a whole story for another time. But anyway, my point was that I now have four foster brothers plus Mez's brother from Eritrea. So essentially five extra brothers that live at home with my mum and dad. And over again, each time, that experience looks different, but the love and the nurturing and the acceptance has been the same from my parents. And having that example has definitely been very inspirational to me, and something that I've really embraced, that you can recognize yourself in everybody if you are willing to. You can find connection with everybody if you are willing to, if you are open to recognizing the things that unite us and embracing the things that are different. And that is definitely, it's a continuation of that that I carry in my work.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Jazz. And Shemik, I know we met some years ago at Dartford.
My mum's also very inspired.
Because
just to have it on record on your podcast, yeah.
Well, we might actually. I was just about to mention your mum.
Big ups to Shemik's mum.
Yeah, when we met, it was at Dartington, When we were working on the Tagore Festival, and you were part of the South Asian Music Youth Orchestra in Terang at that time. And I know, and I mentioned that because your mother was actually there sharing her films. But I know quite a big influence on your life has also been Rabindranath Tagore and the philosophies behind Tagore, and that's how we first met as well. So I wondered, is that still holding true today? Is that a very big question?
I don't know how to nugget-size that or like bite-size that. I think Tagore must have been one of the first words I heard as a child before many other words, and heard his songs, probably started singing his songs without really knowing what they meant. And within his songs lies this incredible, his literature, his work, lies the message of humanity and how that one word encapsulates everything from relationships to nature to divinity, not religion, but divinity, to spirituality. And by singing that, you create vibrations in your body that affirm all those truths. And so, they're not actually songs, they're like chants, really. I know they have lyrics and they have melodies, but when you're in Shantiniketan and there are 100 people gathered around this massive banyan tree, everyone knows the words, everyone knows the melodies, all the intricate ornamentations in the melodies, and this group is moving as one, and the tree is kind of vibrating with you, that it's an extraordinary feeling. And my mum still sings today. I grew up with these songs, with the teachings, and she's when we arrived to this country when I was sort of just about a teenager, she was adamant that, you know, the harmonium would come out and she would play and she would get my brother and I to sing, like in the mornings, in the evenings, before dinner, after supper, whatever. And I think subconsciously, subconsciously through that, a message of sort of openness is maybe her legacy, that we're here with.
Lovely to be reminded of that time as well at Dartington. It was a very special time coming together then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, Jazz, what is next for you? I mean, this is a big project. It's at the start, really, isn't it? And what are your hopes and dreams for Asylum Speakers?
We have a big mission.
You have a big mission.
We have a big mission.
Great.
And the mission is for every school-age child to have heard a first-hand story of migration or displacement before they leave school. So every child in the UK can go on to make decisions or form opinions based on actually having met somebody with this background, with this story, with this experience. So currently at Hawkwood this week, we're training the first cohort of asylum speakers to go out and share their stories in a way that feels empowering, that feels not re-traumatizing, not, you know, that is having the impact that we want, but also allowing the audiences to come to their own conclusions. And that's what we're busy with this week. It's the first time that we've gone through this training with a group of speakers, and we've got some amazing speaking coaches here, which is really exciting. But the goal is, the main mission is for refugees and asylum seekers to be welcomed with the open arms that they deserve, and to not be scapegoated and pointed the finger at for things that are nothing to do with them. Yes.
Jazz, so you were just saying your amazing mission. I mean, that's incredible. And I'd love to hear how people can help, how people can get involved with Asylum Speakers.
Yeah, well, there are some really easy ways. For a start, the book Asylum Speakers now exists. It's available to buy most places that you buy books, and that's a really good place to first introduce yourself to some of these stories and answer some of the questions that you might have. And also, it's a good gift to somebody who you feel might need to hear, to open their heart a little to asylum speakers or refugees, asylum seekers. I now use those phrases interchangeably. I've got asylum speakers and asylum seekers in my head. So that's a good way to start. And I would say that is always the place to begin to educate and understand. And I feel that prejudice often comes from a lack of understanding or awareness. And so an increase in that is always where I would begin.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And Shomik, you have got a lot going on this year. What have you got coming up that you're really excited about and looking forward to?
Well, I mean, almost everything I have coming up sort of just comes back to all these subjects that we're talking about. I'm the artist in residence with the Philharmonia Orchestra this year. And so we've been working on the theme of displacement. And the objective is to create a work that that through music and text and visuals, it's a multidisciplinary work. A lot of our shows are that sort of makes people understand some of the issues around displacement. And of course, what music can do is not just make people understand or persuade them, but make them feel. And I'm very privileged and lucky to be able to call myself a musician and have access to those kind of, you know, some of the best musicians in the world, really. And so we're exploring displacement, migration, access, well, maybe I could let you in into a secret. I mean, the show is called Borderlands, and it's...
We're getting an exclusive right now.
It's going to be set in an airport, and I won't say any more.
Wow!
But also the green room. But also the green room. I'm very, very, very excited about the green room and what we can do with musicians, and basically reconnecting them to their instruments, and then finding bridges for them to go into new spaces with their music.
Well, what an inspirational conversation this has been. Jazz O'Hara, Shomik Datta, thank you very much for joining us on our Hawkwood podcast. And
I wish you
all the best for your projects, which are just so inspirational. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, tell your friends, or sign up to our mailing list or on social media.